Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Well, it turns out there really is a Bible Belt. The Gallup poll is out with a very, very interesting survey. It made the news late last week and is going to be the topic of our conversation today. It is a study state by state throughout the United States where the question was asked of the citizens of the 50 states, is religion an important part of your daily life? And now, ranking number one in terms of responses where citizens said, yes, religion is an important part of my daily life, was the state of Mississippi. And in the state of Mississippi, the numbers were huge, 85%. That's 85 out of every 100 citizens surveyed in Mississippi said religion is an important part of my life. On the other hand, bringing up the other end of this survey is the state of Vermont. And in Vermont, only 42 out of 100 said religion is a very important part of my daily life. Now, we're going to be talking about this today on the Albert Mohler Program. The question is, how would we explain this? What does this mean? And as Christians, what does this tell us about our challenge in terms of evangelization, in terms of Great Commission witness, in terms of seeing churches established and flourish in all 50 states? This ought to be the kind of thing that interests Christians, because every once in a while, a statistical study comes along, like this one, that raises some of the most important questions. How did this happen? What does this mean? We'll be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll give you the data on all 50 states, but I'll just give you an advance warning. There really is a Bible Belt, no doubt about it, when you start to look at this particular data. It also tells you something about how some states and regions are changing. We'll be talking about that and more. I'd love to know what you're thinking about it. What does it mean? When you look at this kind of variation, I mean, the difference between 42 and 85 is simply huge on a question of this kind of significance. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. We'll be glad to get as many calls and questions online as possible in the next hour. I am just back from being in the nation of Turkey, and I came back and walked right into what Kentucky's governor has defined as the largest and most significant natural disaster in the state's history, that being the incredible ice storm that took place on Tuesday of last week. Before even talking about that, I want to express appreciation, as always, to my guest host, Russell Moore, Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Senior Vice President for Academic Administration here at Southern Seminary. Let me just say, not only am I always grateful for his excellent hosting of this program, I'm grateful in this past week that he was willing to do far more than he was able to do, because it turned out that the weather was the big issue, shutting down the entire city, in fact, most of the state. Let me just tell you, you can do a lot of things without electricity, but radio is not one of them. As a matter of fact, there are probably more things you can't do without electricity, as it turns out. One of them is, of course, heat your home and keep an academic campus going. So we've been facing a real challenge, and I'll tell you, last night, about 5:30 in the evening, the lights came on the campus of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Boyce College, and it was Tuesday when they went out. That's one of the sweetest sights I've seen in a very, very long time. It's another reminder to us, so these natural disasters, when they take place, sometimes out of the blue, quite literally, they're just a reminder to us, especially when it comes to something like this loss of electrical power, that we really have made ourselves dependent on such things. And without electricity, it's very hard to do mass endeavors. And just in terms of the heating of our homes and everything else, it is very necessary. We need to keep some of our Kentucky citizens and others here in this Midwest region, especially the Ohio Valley, moving west into some of the Great Plains states, also affected by the storm. There's still some people that are without power. The last estimate I saw was about 400,000 people in various states in this region still without power. And some of you who may be in warmer places may not be thinking of the fact that that can be not only an inconvenience, but a real matter of life and death for some. Under the most extreme circumstances here. Well, I was in Turkey. I am thrilled to be back. I had a great visit to Turkey, and it was, for me, an eye-opening experience being there for a week. in this nation, which is literally the land bridge between Europe and Asia. Being in the city of Istanbul, I just got to tell you, as an historian, it was everything that I had hoped for and more. In the last few days, I've had the experience of walking into a church built by Justinian in the 6th century. Then the largest church ever built in Christendom, and no church building has ever been built larger than the Hagia Sophia, which was, of course, in 1453, turned into a mosque when the Ottomans conquered Constantinople. And of that, you just walk every square inch of the city of Istanbul, formerly Constantinople, is just littered with the symbols and relics of history. Everywhere you turn, there is, in that great city, evidence of the history of three great empires that were established there with that city as the capital. Of course, that is a great city, Constantinople, that now Istanbul, since 1453, that straddles two continents. It itself is divided by the Bosphorus, that strait that runs from the Sea of Marmara down into the Mediterranean and then up all the way to the Black Sea. And you take the ferry several times a day just in doing business in Istanbul between Asia and Europe. It's an amazing thing. Just on Thursday of last week, I was standing on the Theodosian walls, walls that for a millennium withstood invasion. It's just an incredible place. And, of course, from Christian history, well, the hotel in which I was staying in the Kadıköy district of Istanbul is in the city once known as Chalcedon, and just a few miles from the city known as Nicaea. And those of you who know your church history know that those cities represent two of the earliest councils of the church where two of the greatest victories for Christian orthodoxy were won. At Nicaea in 325 AD, the victory in that crucial time for the full deity and humanity of Christ as a clear principle of Christian orthodoxy. And then about a century later there in Chalcedon, where the Trinity itself was defined in its clearest terms. I'll be talking more about my experiences in Turkey, and especially in terms of modern Turkey. You know, we're looking at a worldwide challenge in terms of Islamic civilization, in terms of what many people define as Islamic extremism and Islamic terrorism. Turkey is, by constitution, what it defines itself as a secular state. But I can tell you, it is pervasively Islamic. Those who were the founders of the Ottoman Empire from 1453 onward had the determination to fill the sky of Istanbul with more minarets than we found in any other city on earth, and they succeeded. And it was a very interesting thing to be there in an overwhelmingly Islamic society where Islam is a part of what is defined as Turkishness. Turkey is a nation that has a law. It's a law against offending Turkishness. Very, very interesting. I had the opportunity to meet with some of the central Islamic officials there in Turkey and to take place in some scholarly discussions about the Quran and the Bible. And, you know, that's just good work when you have the opportunity to talk about the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and to do so in a respectful dialogue and discussion with people who come from a very different worldview and very different set of commitments. And it was respectful, but it was also clear. And for that opportunity, I am very, very grateful. I'm also very, very grateful to be back. You know, there is no place like home, and that's not just a matter of sentiment. Every time I'm out of the United States of America, I'm always thankful to get back. And I'll tell you, I was very, very glad to have that blue document with me, that blue-jacketed United States passport. And I'll just tell you that I am very, very thankful to be a citizen of the United States, and it is a glorious thing, an incredible privilege to visit other countries, but it is an equally and greater sense of privilege that leads you to come back to the United States and to present that passport to the customs and immigration officials of your own country and have it stamped citizen returned. That's a great moment. And there are just privileges that come to citizens of this country that can only become apparent when you travel to other countries of the world. And so this is one American who's glad to be back. This is a nation that is facing significant challenges. This is a nation that is literally playing around with its own destiny in terms of so many moral issues. This is a nation that is at a crossroads on so many crucial issues of the determination of our culture and where we're going to be going. Issues as important as marriage and family. We're facing, of course, this financial crisis that is so much the preoccupation of our times. We're looking at challenges many of those challenges very well defined when you're a nation like Turkey that, of course, shares a border with both Iran and Iraq, as well as several other nations. But I am thankful to be a citizen of this country. I consider it a matter of God's providence in my life, but also a matter of my obligation, because there are things for the cause of the gospel that we can do as Americans that those who hold other documentation and other citizenships cannot do. And I hope we always have that in mind as a matter of our stewardship and responsibility as well. We're going to come back to talk about the Gallup poll just out showing a wild variation between the states when citizens are asked the question, is religion an important part of your daily life? We're going to talk about what it means and how we should think about it on the Albert Mueller Program. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The Gallup survey is out with something that's really, really interesting. It's reported in Religion News Service. It is also found in terms of the study and its report at the website for the Gallup organization, which is at gallup.com, and I'll be writing about it overnight, posting an article in the morning about this. The title of the study is The State of the States, Importance of Religion. Now, it's reported by Frank Newport, and here is the second in a four-part series, so other kinds of questions are being asked as well. But here's the question that was asked this time. Is religion an important part of your daily life? Straightforward question. And pretty easily understood, 350,000 interviews were conducted by Gallup in late 2008. The question, is religion an important part of your daily life? The answer is yes or no. And those who answered yes are what is the crucial measure here. And the most religious state in terms of responses to that question is the state of Mississippi. And the least is Vermont. Vermont, only 42 out of 100 said religion is an important part of my daily life. In Mississippi, 85 of 100. On the other hand, more than twice as many said religion is a part of my daily life. There are huge questions here. Just in terms of what this means in terms of America, it tells us that there's a lot of variation among the states. It tells us that there's a lot of variation among regions. It tells us that there really is a Bible Belt. I'm looking at the map right now, and you're looking at a swath from Texas all the way to the Atlantic coast that is very, very religious. And as a matter of fact, the gradation here is from most religious to least religious. The Gallup poll has this at their website. Let me just give you the raw data. And very quickly, I'm going to give you the numbers from the most religious to the least religious in terms of the states. Remember, the question is religion an important part of your daily life? Number one, Mississippi, 85%. Number two, Alabama, 82%. Then South Carolina, 80%. Tennessee, 79%. Louisiana, 78%. Arkansas, 78%. Georgia, 76%. North Carolina, 76%. Oklahoma, 75%. Kentucky, 74%. Texas, 74%. West Virginia, 71%. Now, that's all right there through what is more or less the Bible Belt. And you have the lowest number being 71% in West Virginia, highest being 85% in Mississippi. Then you start going into, for instance, Western and Midwestern states. Here are the next sequence. Kansas, 70%. Utah, 69%. Missouri, 68%. Virginia, 68%. South Dakota, 68%. North Dakota, 68%. Indiana, 68%. Now, that's interesting. You got five states in a row there that all scored 68%. Then Nebraska, 67%. New Mexico, 66%. Pennsylvania, 65%. Florida, 65%, Maryland, 65%, Ohio, 65%, then Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois, and Michigan, all 64%, Delaware, Wisconsin, and District of Columbia, Idaho, Arizona, all 61%, New Jersey, 60%, Wyoming, 58%, Colorado, 57%, Hawaii and California, also 57%, Montana, 56%, New York, 56%, Connecticut, 55%. So here you're dealing with roughly half of the citizens saying that religion is an important part of their daily life. You're down to numbers right at about half. Connecticut, 55%. Nevada, 54%. Rhode Island, 53%. Oregon, 53%. Washington, 52%. Alaska, 51%. Now we're in the most secular states here. Massachusetts, 48, Maine, 48, New Hampshire, 46, and Vermont, 42. Just a couple of observations here. It had been stated in recent years that the most secular part of America was the Pacific Northwest, in particular the states of Oregon and Washington, along with much of Northern California. Well, that now looks to be no longer the case, and the Gallup organizers and researchers have said here that it now appears that the Northeast is now the least religious part of the country, where you have Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, and New York, none of them scoring as much as 60%. New York's the highest there at 56, Vermont the lowest at 42. You have, on the other hand, a swath of extremely high responses through the Bible Belt, and also a couple of other states that are of key importance there outside the Bible Belt, where you have pretty high responses from states like Missouri and both of the Dakotas and Indiana. But then you're well below 70 and trending downward. I'd love to know what you think about this. This tells us something about our challenge. It tells us something about the composition of our nation. It tells us something about how we connect the dots with other issues as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Travis, listening, calling on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Travis.
Hello, Dr. Morrow. How are you today?
I'm great. Glad to hear from you.
Hey, yes. When I was listening to the results, I was wondering what your thoughts were on the results from this poll as compared to the recent presidential election.
You know, that's a very interesting question, Travis, and that's the kind of question that has the attention of others as well. And I'm glad to say right now I have the overlay. I can put these maps right on top of each other. I can look at the Gallup poll map of this relative religiosity of the states over against the Electoral College map. And let me tell you, there's a lot of overlap here. You're looking at your question is, I think, based on a very keen intuition, Travis. For instance, the regions that went almost overwhelmingly for Barack Obama, and also look pretty much overwhelmingly for John Kerry and Al Gore in the previous two races, they are the Northeast and the Northwest. So if you take the Northeast and the Northwest, you're looking at the two most secular areas, and they are just solidly for the Democratic candidate for President of the United States. On the other hand, if you look at the Bible Belt, those states from Texas to the Atlantic Coast, with the exceptions this year on the Atlantic coast of North Carolina and Virginia, all of those states went Republican. So this is where we would have to say, based upon statistical analysis, Travis, that there's a correlation here. And, of course, every good statistician is keen to point out that correlation does not mean causation. But I'm going to step out of the statistical world for a moment and tell you that in terms of worldview analysis, you're clearly onto something here. There are more secular worldview adherents who were keen to vote for the Democratic candidate, and far more who identify with evangelical Christianity who voted for the Republican candidate in the 2008 race. And it was interesting that right after the November 4th election last year, a lot of information was put out there that there had been a shift in the evangelical vote. It turns out the best number I have is that there may have been a 3 or 4% shift. That's not massive. That's not massive. It's interesting, but it's not massive, as these particular numbers indicate. Travis, thanks for your question. Your question could be next. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, I'll tell you one thing. You certainly have history that is at least a part of this. I mean, you're looking at the Northwest. That's one of the least congregationalized areas in America as those states came to be. On the other hand, you have the Bible Belt and much of the Eastern Seaboard that was, of course, very well congregationalized. That was just a couple weeks ago in Charleston, South Carolina. A great seaport city, so important to American history, and of course very important to the history of almost every denomination in America, because everyone was there to establish a church. But you know, what really troubles us, I think, from an historical perspective, is that that doesn't explain New England. Because if ever there was an area that has been thoroughly congregationalized in terms of its founding, it was New England, and now it is the most secular portion of the United States. Clearly, something is taking place there. Something had taken place over accumulated decades. Let's talk about what that is. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about this new Gallup survey in which people from all 50 states and the District of Columbia, so you have 51 entries here, were asked the question, is religion an important part of your daily life? Yes or no? And folks in Mississippi, 85% said yes. Folks in Vermont, only 42% said yes. Fascinating, fascinating thing. We're going to be talking about why it's so, what it means. I'm looking forward to the conversation with you. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. Let's go to Clarksville, Virginia. Connie's listening on XM. Go ahead, Connie.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. As you read through the list of states, one of the things that occurred to me was that the states that had the highest percentages were also all of the states that were involved in the Confederacy. And the northern states that were more industrialized at the time have become more secular. And it seems that other states, like North Carolina, that were part of the Confederacy, now has the Silicon Valley East Triangle, and Virginia, being as close as it is to Washington, D.C., is also declining or becoming more involved in more industrialized or more involved in technology. So it seems kind of like as states become more involved in that, the religiosity drops.
You know, those are very keen insights, Connie. I'm going to try to break them out just a little bit here. First, you mentioned industrialization. And, you know, the secularization theorists who were arguing that industrialization would lead to secularity, to a lowering of religious commitments, there's some evidence for that in this. Interesting you mentioned that. You know, when you think of the industrial states, for instance, Michigan shows here, the heart of the auto industry, it shows up here in the bottom half. 64% said religion is an important part of my daily life. That ranks 29th. And then when you look at these others, you're exactly right. Looking at American history, you're looking at so many of these industrialized states coming in as certainly the more secular among the respondents here. So you're onto something there. You also mentioned a couple of other things, the Confederacy, just talking about American history and this. Let me throw out a couple of things related to that that I think help to explain what is, to me, the most interesting part of this, which is the Northeast. Because the Northeast is, after all, where you had everyone from Jonathan Edwards and so many of the establishment of the great missionary efforts. You had the building of great churches. Let me mention three things about the Northeast. Because the Northeast is now coming in, and that's what is making a lot of news out of this survey, is the most secular region of the country. Number one, in the Northeast, you had theological liberalism first raise its head. You had universities and divinity schools such as Harvard and Yale, quickly taken over by theological liberalism. You had the rise of Unitarianism and the whole transcendentalist movement that was highly toxic to what we would consider to be traditional religion, or as a Christian theologian, I would say, to Orthodox Christianity. The second thing you had happen up in the Northeast was that you had the two Great Awakenings. And what's particularly interesting to me in that is that in the aftermath of the Second Great Awakening, and let's date that roughly from the 1790s to the 1840s, somewhere in there, about 50 years, in that Second Great Awakening, you had an enormous amount of concentrated interest in experience, in experientialism, and that became a substitute for doctrinal Christianity. And what happened is that that area just went overblown in terms of Christian experience of all kinds of different kinds, a lot of it obviously false and artificial, and it led to an enormous spiritual deadness. Historians refer to, for instance, upstate New York as the burned over district in this period, because it just was like this revivalistic wildfire burned out and left secularism in its wake. The third thing is, of course, you do have the rise of the great cities in that area, and it turns out that cities trend toward secularism. And the elites and all the rest in the universities, very quickly, the Northeast began to show some signs of increasing secularization. But, you know, one break on that in terms of just the statistical analysis had been Catholicism. But what's really interesting is, and it shows up right in the documentation coming from this report, that the church that appears to be most in decline in those areas is the Catholic Church. Fewer and fewer persons in the Northeast are identifying themselves as Catholics. And so that's a part of this, no doubt. And what you're looking at there is also the breakdown of the kind of ethnicity with which a lot of Catholicism had been well identified. Irish Catholics, Polish Catholics, etc. In postmodern America, all those things tend to become more relativized. We're going to be talking about this when we come back. Lots here to chew on, looking at this report. When Americans from all 50 states and the District of Columbia were asked, is religion an important part of your daily life? If you want to see just how different Americans can be, measured by state, this study is about as clear a demonstration of that as I have ever seen. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We'd love to hear from you. We still have time for your calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, you know, as a Christian theologian looking at this kind of data, I realize the limitations and the significance of statistical research, because I need to talk about this just to make sure we're intellectually honest here. Number one, this does not mean that 85% of Mississippians or evangelical Christians have a clear grasp of the gospel and are answering because they are faithful, devoted followers of Jesus Christ. Religion here is defined simply by however anyone wants to answer it. The question was simply, is religion an important part of your daily life? So the respondent could decide religion means just about anything. But what's really interesting is that given that kind of elasticity, you still have such a divergent kind of response. You still have 85% of Mississippians saying, yes, it's a very important part of my life, and only 42% of those in Vermonters saying it's an important part of my life. And another thing when you start looking at this is it doesn't tell you anything about you know, what's going on in terms of the theological beliefs and convictions that are represented here, and by how people would wish to think or aspire to be those who integrate their convictions with everyday life. So it isn't saying here that there's necessarily greater virtue in one state than in another, but you know, in terms of the worldview analysis, there really is a lot going on here, and it really is interesting. There should be no doubt, therefore, that people in Mississippi, in terms of the reflection of Mississippi culture, church attendance patterns and all the rest, religious references and all the rest, are going to be markedly different than what you find in Vermont. And, you know, I was just in New England at the end of the year last year, and you can't look at the sky in New England without seeing all of these historic church buildings. Every single town and township in New England, you know, had a central congregational church, and then generally many other congregational churches. But they're not well attended, and they haven't been for a very, very long time. And the same thing is true, of course, in so many of the northern cities, where the northern cities had these great churches, great cathedral-like structures and all the rest. And, of course, you had the immigrant churches in New York City, Pittsburgh, Chicago. You can go into Polish neighborhoods, Polish Catholic churches, just huge edifices. In a city like Chicago, you can look at Slavic and Croatian, you know, churches. And the same thing in New York City, of course, especially with Italian, Irish, and other forms of religious faith imported from the immigrants who came, and they brought it with them. But you're looking at a great fall off there, because in the main, those immigrants were coming with Catholic beliefs and Jewish beliefs, in terms of a minority, but still high concentrations in some of these northeastern cities. But when you're looking, for instance, at American Judaism, you're looking at the fact that the majority of American Jews, and you can look at poll after poll, seem to indicate a tremendous secularity in their lives. And for Catholics, well, especially in the Northeast, it looks like it's much the same. So what does this say to us about our challenge? Well, as an evangelical Christian, I look at this, and it tells me that we've got a great challenge. It doesn't mean that we have less of a challenge in Mississippi in terms of reaching people with the gospel, necessarily, than in Vermont. But it does mean that people in Mississippi are more likely to at least think they're Christians, and to think that they think in Christian terms, whether they are adequately shaped by the Bible, whether they have had a genuine understanding of the gospel, whether they are devoted followers of Jesus Christ, they are at least more prone to be church attenders, more prone to know the language, to know the conception, to know the story, to feel themselves a part of the religion of their area. But, you know, when you look at something like Vermont, you look at the Northeast, you look at the Northwest, it's clear we have a great challenge here because of the secularity of those regions. And again, I'm going to point out that this is a different secularity in so many ways, because in the Northwest, it's not as if the Great Awakenings took place there. It's not as if you had a deeply established Christian culture and congregationalized culture there. It just really never happened. There are churches and there are Christians, but it was a largely secular settlement from the very beginning compared to the East Coast. But then you look at the Northeast, and again, whether it's immigrant Catholicism or this colonial Congregationalism, you're looking at the collapse of the kind of commitments that had once shaped a culture, and it isn't something that just happened. These things don't just happen overnight. There appears to be some shift here in the Northeast becoming more secular even than the Northwest, but the Northeast has a pedigree here going all the way back again to the rise of theological liberalism, Unitarianism, Transcendentalism, to the secularity of the area just in terms of how it shaped itself, and going back to the burned over district, the end of the Great Awakenings and all the rest. It's a sign to us of the kind of challenge we have. But I'll tell you what, when you start looking at the challenge of Christians, of Christian churches, of evangelical Christians in particular, to reach this nation and to reach the many and various peoples of this nation, it shows us we've got a bigger challenge than a lot of people would think. And it tells us once again that we live in a nation of incredible variety. Differences really do matter, and these differences really do exist. It matters whether you live in Mississippi or Vermont. It matters whether you live in Alabama or, in this case, in Oregon. It matters a great deal. And because of that, those of us who have responsibility to plant churches, to send pastors, to encourage evangelism, this is a matter that ought to be very much on our screen. And if anything, it tells us that that we've got a lot of work to do as Christians in terms of our witness in many parts of this country, especially where these numbers are particularly low. And we probably had better be learning some things just by looking at this that might sober us, but might also help to sharpen our strategy, our strategic thinking, as we think about the opportunity to be involved in Great Commission witness right here in this country. When you look at a map of the world, and sometimes missiologists will do this, different surveys and research reports will do this, in which they'll try to demonstrate, for instance, how much of the world is committed to this religion or to that religion. Well, you ought to be very, very suspicious of those maps, because they'll point to North America and to the United States in particular and say that's a Christian country. At least it's dominated by Christian commitments. Well, you start looking at this and you realize it's very, very different than people might think. You're looking here at tremendous diversity just within the 50 states in the District of Columbia. It's not one thing. It never has been. I think it's really important for us to remember that. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Let's go to Robert calling from Canada, our northern neighbor. Go right ahead, Robert.
Yes, sir. I was listening to radio, and up in Quebec, they had the same survey about 2 years ago, and the number was around 17%. So I thought it was kind of amazing that Northeast in Vermont was 42, and up in Quebec is just 17. So that was kind of amazing.
You know, that's a very interesting point to bring up, Robert. And, of course, Canada right across the border there. Very interesting. I have here my hand. From Statistics Canada, the General Social Survey, indicating that only 32% of Canadians, not just in Quebec, as you mentioned, but all Canadians, only 32% indicate that they attend any religious service at least monthly. And you start looking at that, that's versus about 65% all across the American statistics. And, of course, in some states, again, looking at the variation here, is pretty remarkable. In some states, it's as much as 75% who attend regularly. So we're looking here at tremendous variation, and thanks for the call from Canada. It's great to hear from you, Robert. And it is really interesting. You have to wonder, you know, how many of the same trends, how many of the same conditions and challenges really represent Canada as well as the United States. There in Quebec, of course, you have French-speaking Catholicism that has so much a part of the history. But as in the northeast of the United States, where Catholicism has been losing adherence, you've got the same thing perhaps in Quebec. And, of course, this has a history. It's not just a recent phenomenon. However, it is interesting that the report that comes from Religious News Service does indicate, here you have Mark Silk, an observer of these things, who says that he suspects some Catholics have left the church because of the Catholic sex abuse scandal that first erupted in Boston. Then, and this is his words, kind of pushed some sort of relatively loose affiliation Catholics over the edge, end quote. Well, it's really interesting to look at this. You'll find the data. If you just go to my website overnight, you'll find an article I'm going to post tonight, and you're going to find that very interesting. I think you can look at the study yourself and draw your own conclusions. And by the way, this is the kind of survey and data that might be interesting to share with your pastor or a church leader, just in terms of saying, you know, when we start thinking about our missions responsibility, we start planning mission trips and thinking of our own Great Commission involvements, it'd be good to have this kind of information at hand. When we come tomorrow, we're going to be talking about something very, very interesting, and that is a report of really an argument that has come from Great Britain, and in which you have a figure there with the government who's arguing that having more than two children is just irresponsible, and that it ought to be considered wrong for parents to have more than two children, and abortion ought to be preferable to parents having more than two children. Two's enough, he says. It's an extreme argument, but it's coming from an official source, and it's the kind of argument that is going to gain traction when the people who want to push this kind of agenda get in areas of responsibility. Thanks for listening today. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation on the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.